Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I'm so pleased to have you with me here on this episode. I'm joined by Lee Pycroft, who has been on the show before, in actual fact. And in that episode, we talked about her career and about how her career had evolved. She is originally a makeup artist. And 3 years later, nearly 3 years later, I've asked her to come on the show because she's a trained psychotherapist and she will describe all of her training to you in the early stages of this episode. But talk about love and relationships and boundary setting and how to feel comfortable not only being in a relationship but getting into a relationship. And this particular episode was spawned totally by Estée Lalonde coming on the show and our conversation about sex, love and relationships. And the feedback from that made me realise that it is a topic that I have shied away from somewhat and now feel that it's important to commit to audio. And if I'm going to talk about something, I want to make sure that I get somebody on the podcast who I think adds value to the conversation, and Lee really does. Yes, she's a dear friend and I have so much time for her, but I also really respect what she's doing with her work as a counsellor and psychotherapist. So I am really, really delighted to have her on the show. It's a big one and it's deep. There's a lot. As I say in the show, I needed to lie down afterwards, or at least a long drink and a think, a long drink of water and a think. You know, those conversations where you're like, God, there's a lot there. So all you need to know is this is a very in-depth conversation about love, relationships, boundary setting, what it means to you, what it means to the other person. And she shared insights that kind of, I guess on some level I knew but didn't really understand, or is it on some level I understood but didn't really know? I don't know. There's a lot in here and I really hope that you find value. I will put all of the links to Lee and her work and how you can get hold of her in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streamlouding. That's me trying to say too many words quickly. Wherever you are streaming and downloading this episode of the podcast, she is also a member of the Facebook group. So if you aren't already, join that group. The link to join is in the show notes. But I really, rather than wang on too long, I'm just going to say, here she is, the really wonderful Lee Pycroft, making her second appearance on The Emma Gunn Show. It's truly a delight to have Lee Pycroft back on the show.
Thank you so much. I was one of your first ever guests, wasn't
I? You really were.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, and look where you've come from and where you are now. Oh my gosh.
But look at you. Last time you came on, we talked about, so listeners, if you didn't listen to that first episode with Lee, then it's back in the archive. And obviously I'll put the link in the show notes. Lee and I have known each other for a long time.
Over a decade.
Decades.
Decades, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I met you on a photo shoot or at an event. You're a makeup artist.
With Elle McPherson.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You took the very famous picture of me with Elle McPherson where she sort of used me as a shield. It's up in my kitchen.
It's still there.
It's a funny picture. Yeah. I'll dig it out. And then we obviously have stayed in touch. We don't live too far from each other.
Yeah. She's a bonus.
Yes. And you came on the show because you were kind of one of the pioneers or the early voices saying beauty isn't just about makeup and skincare. It's about how it makes you feel.
Yeah. Yeah. absolutely.
And that really led to a transformation in terms of what you do day to day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because we spoke a lot of the time about the charitable initiative that I ran, I remember, for quite some time, and using beauty as a form of self-care. Mm. And I think since I last saw you, and I don't know if I was training as a coach then as well or not.
Yeah,
I think I just started, hadn't I? And that was in the work of Tony Robbins, the peak performance coach. And then... through that and really seeing the power a makeover could have on the way someone would feel and, you know, creating these events where people would get to experience something different. Mm. I then went on to train as what's called a human givens psychotherapist, which is a really lovely, warm, non-voyeuristic approach to psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. And what's so lovely is it's sort of about, you know, say someone has a trauma, it's about unhooking that emotional trauma without necessarily even having to know the story of it. Mm. It's about moving the person forward as quickly as possible. So it's not a therapy that's based in, you know, let's look at what happened with your mum when you were three, unless that impacts now and you would unhook that trauma as quickly as possible or whatever that conditioning was. Mm. So, and it's based around people's emotional needs. So really I trained in all of that in order to be able to change the conversation in beauty around actually there's a lot more to this beauty ritual than we first think and what's underneath our drive to look a certain way, right? What are we looking, what emotion are we looking to feel? Mm. What are we looking to experience through that? And I think that's so fascinating. And now also changing that conversation and also offering one-to-one psychotherapy sessions with people in my home. So I've got sort of multiple skill set now and still working, you know, still doing sort of celebrities and stuff in the beauty industry. So yeah,
it's incredible. And honestly, listeners, hanging out with Lee is amazing, because if you're having a bit of a rough time, just take Lee out for a drink. you sort me out good and proper.
Oh no, I mean, it's I mean, I think why people do the things they do and why we all do the things we do is so fascinating. You know, what drives us, and often our behaviour can be so unconscious because we're running patterns and things that we learned, conditioning that we learned when we were small, you know, and we'll repeat these patterns over and over again because with them there comes a certainty, which is an emotional need.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of where I am today. Mm. So it's been quite the journey.
So much so. And also, I know that you love your work this is sort of slightly off tangent, but I know that you loved your work as a makeup artist and obviously still do. But doing what you're doing now, do you feel like that the saying, you know, I should have always been doing this, do you feel a sense of being happier? And
it's so strange because it was a real pull rather than a push, if you know what I mean. I love the beauty industry. I think the industry in itself can be quite status driven, that meeting that need for status. I mean, you only have to look at, you know, fashion magazines and people dressed head to toe in Prada or some, you know, high end designer. The reason they're buying into that is to meet that need for status and significance, which is fine. That's their way of meeting that need, right? So I think for this, I'm very driven by connection and understanding and studying, you know, the different disciplines I have. You meet a different type of person and you dig very deep into what makes someone tick. Mm. And I think it was completely fascinating. And while I still, you know, love certain aspects of the beauty industry, this is, for me, got a lot more weight and substance and interest for me. Mm. And that's why I think it's, you know, the way I think the world has gone in terms of sustainability, of people are more conscious of what they're eating, of our environment, all that kind of thing. And that's to do also with the awareness of our mental health and our emotional well-being. So I think, you know, the beauty industry has a huge platform to be able to raise awareness of some of these issues. And I've been doing different talks around schools and universities and at different places to really talk about this stuff, you know, and the connection between how we feel and how we look and how we look and how we feel and emotion and how, you know, to meet our emotional needs in sustainable and healthy ways. Mm. And of course, what we're talking about today, essentially relationships, how we're in relationship with everybody, right?
Yeah.
You know, with colleagues, with, you know, friendships, siblings, parents, aunts, uncles, you know, and what we learn as a young person growing up with all these different relationship dynamics, of course, will impact where we are today with them.
It's true, isn't it? Well, this is a subject that I haven't really broached that much on the podcast because I don't feel like I am an expert in it at all. But I had Esté on recently, Esté Lalonde, and we talked about sex and relationships and knowing yourself. And it made me realise the feedback that I got. I know she got a lot of messages and I got a lot of messages, made me realise this is an important conversation to be having. But I think from my perspective, I said to Lee before we started recording, I don't want to get too personal, but in order to ask the questions that I'm going to ask, I have to give some context. And I definitely have always felt that love and relationships were things that happened to other people. So, for example, my public-facing job working on a magazine, when I used to cover engagements and weddings and babies, it made sense that it was happening to other people. And it always looked very easy. And then in my own life, you know, I'd go on a social media date and I'd hate it and wouldn't enjoy it. And I just thought, well, that's just not my road then. It looks so easy for other people to just fall into these relationships, to build these connections. And here I am. And maybe I'm just not a connected person.
Which, of course, we know is not true.
But I think when I put the call out into the Facebook group and I said, look, we're going to be talking about love and relationships, it was really interesting what came back. And a lot of it, I guess, in order to go back to basics, because I think this will be one of many conversations we'll have about this on the podcast, because you're welcome back anytime, is the starting point of one of my favourite people ever, RuPaul, always says at the end of the show, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? And for me, that has become more profound as time has gone on. Is that fundamentally true?
Yeah, I mean, I think, firstly, I think when we're saying love ourselves, what do we mean by that? And what would that look like to you? Because we can throw sort of terms around, but how would you know if you were loving yourself? And what does that mean to love yourself? Does it mean you are respecting yourself? Does it mean you have boundaries in place? Does it mean you know what you want and what you don't want, that you're able to speak up for yourself? You know, it can mean different things to different people.
Yeah.
So I think it's digging down a bit into what that means for you. Now, you know, for me, or if I had a client in my room, I'd be looking at, well, you know, if we have a respect for ourselves, if we know what we want in our life, you know, in terms of a romantic relationship or even a friendship, or, you know, and it's that mutual, it's that respect for ourselves and knowing our boundaries is essential really to understanding ourselves and being able to voice what we need with other people.
Right.
You know, and sometimes, you know, if you've grown up in an environment where you maybe have been told the whole time that you're not good enough, or in some way you're not valuable enough, or you can't have something in terms of a relationship, or your model for a relationship is a poor one, then, you know, growing up and thinking maybe relationships are for other people the whole time, then you don't believe that is possible for you, then of course that starts to manifest in the environment, you know, and it's kind of unpicking a bit about how can we have a self-respect, an appreciation of ourselves without the point, and knowing our value really in a broad sense, because low self-esteem is very much about, you know, an amplified version of our shortcomings, an amplification of our shortcomings, rather than seeing ourselves as a broader view of our strengths and our weaknesses, you know, balanced view, because people who have such huge self-love, if you like, can come across as being, you know, sort of a bit obnoxious, a bit sort of overly confident, if you like. But there's a humility, I think, with knowing our value and our place, and being respectful towards ourselves, and being able to voice that with boundaries in place. Does that make sense? I mean, when you sort of talk about, you know, self-love for yourself, how would you see that? How would you know that you had self-love?
Well, I mean, I'm not paying you, Lee. And we don't necessarily want to go down that road today. but I think when I started looking at what was coming back in the Facebook group, when I thought about, well, why have I avoided this subject on the podcast? Because we all have relationships. We all have love in our lives in some form, however that might look to the individual. And it's that thing of, they do happen. They do just look But it's knowing, as you say, it's knowing yourself within those dynamics, whether it's with a parent, with a sibling, with a friend, with a colleague, with a lover, whatever that might look like. And it's what I'm doing is the comparison thing, which is unhelpful, as we know, anyway. So really, it's what is the starting point? What is the starting point of being able to go into a relationship with healthy boundaries?
Well, I think firstly, you've got to know what you want. You know, what would a healthy relationship look like to you? And if you take it from a perspective of emotional needs, you know, we all have an emotional need for safety and security, autonomy and control. We all have a need for intimacy and connection. That's a huge driver for human beings.
Do you feel like in this day and age that actually our basic need for connection is not able to be met just because of lifestyle?
Well, there's an issue with the intimacy and connection and with attention. The need for, you know, to give and receive attention is also an emotional need. The issue we have nowadays with, you know, we've got cultural stress, you know, more people are talking about stress, which in of itself is emotional needs that are not met in balance.
Right.
So people experience stress, which is not a mental illness in of itself, but is the root cause of many, right? And with the rise of technology and us being on the whole time, you know, longer, people are working more hours because they're constantly in touch, right? But that need for connection is often met through a digital medium. So, and it's kind of like the equivalent of having, you know, a meal, but only having the appetizer. You never actually get the main course.
Right.
So people are connected, but they're not connecting from an emotionally nourishing perspective.
Right.
So like two human beings sitting in front of each other, talking to each other. And seeing the nuances, the body language, making eye contact, right? That's a form of emotional nourishment. And when you have, you know, intimacy, you know, it doesn't necessarily always have to be sexual intimacy. So obviously in a relationship of, you know, a romantic relationship, there are many people that might have a relationship that doesn't have sex, but they're hugely satisfied because they have that in common, right? But you know, to have more passion in the relationship and sensuality, obviously there's a physical interaction. But yes, that can be an issue now because of the digital age and because a lot of people will meet online or use the swipe, you know, swipe sort of apps and that kind of thing. But, you know, so in essence, to answer your question, yes, that can be an issue.
So if you're, what are your one's human needs? Is there a list?
So, yeah. So basically what I was saying was, you know, you've got safety and security. You've got autonomy and control. You've got intimacy and connection. You've got a connection to a wider community. You've got a sense of status and significance. We've got to feel like we're important. We're of value in the world, right? You've got, we need to be stretched and to achieve things, to have a sense of accomplishment in our lives. And there's a difference between being, you know, people often talk about, there's a positive stress. I don't, you know, we wouldn't believe there was a positive stress. You're being stretched, which might feel like you're being the symptoms of stress, but actually it leads to something, some accomplishment at the end.
Right.
Where an overwhelm of stress is like you're repeating the same thing, but you're never kind of getting anywhere. You're just in a sense of overwhelm. And then you've got meaning and purpose. Because when we have meaning and purpose in our life or around anything, we can go through an incredible life challenge, adversity, betrayal. But if we can assign a meaning and purpose, a greater meaning and purpose to that, we can move forward more easily. And then there's, of course, you know, something like privacy. You know, whilst we're in a world which is, you know, we want connection, but we also need a certain amount of time on our own to consolidate information, to reflect how much of those you need. You'll have a sort of hierarchy, if you like. Someone might have security and safety as a big number one. They need to feel certain the whole time. And you might get someone who is very driven by intimacy and connection. So if I'm very driven by connection, but my partner's very driven by certainty and he has to be certain about every single thing before he can love me, that's a potential barrier. Or if someone needs to feel incredibly important before they can connect with you, then unless they feel that, they can't connect. That's a block to them feeling connection.
Right.
You know, and you can meet these needs in a positive or a negative way. You might get a feeling of significance by being a bully, by talking down to your partner, right? Or you can get it through building people up. You might get a sense of status by having a big, significant problem the whole time. Every time you have this big problem, everyone gets around you and you get a certain amount of attention from it. These are not sustainable or ways that are going to lead you to grow, right? But if you can get a sense of status by maybe you contribute to society, you contribute to a charitable cause, you help people out, you build things up that are for a positive, you know, reinforcement of everything and everybody. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So there's sort of various ways of meeting these emotional needs in a positive way and a negative way. And when it comes to relationships, and you're talking about, you know, connection and intimacy, supposing you're really feeling you want some attention, you're feeling you want some intimacy and connection, and actually what you want is deep, meaningful conversation with someone, but you go out off and you have casual sex instead, right? But you're meeting that need on some level, but you're not meeting it to the degree you would like to be meeting it. Of course, you know, if you end up bed hopping from one person to another in order to sort of cover up what you actually do need. And often you find, I mean, you hear this all the time, you know, people will have a breakup and they'll go off and, you know, sleep with several other people in order to avoid feeling the upset from that relationship breakup, right? Or they'll shut down and say, oh, I'm never going to trust again. I'm never going to trust anyone. I'm going to be on my own forever.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a safety mechanism.
Right.
You know, so people who might not enter into a relationship and say, well, you know, that's for someone else. That doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, there's a safety mechanism in that. In that, you know, when we don't put ourselves forward for a relationship, we don't open ourselves up, we don't show who we are, we can stay safe. Whereas, you know, you'll often find people will focus very much on work, for instance, to feel those emotional needs are being met. They might get connection with the people in the office, they might get a sense of status from the work they're doing, they're being stretched, they're accomplishing things. They've got, you know, a sense of meaning from what they're doing. But if they can't transfer that in the context of relationships, because that means they don't have the same control over someone else, right? You can influence each other by our own behavior. But when you're in a relationship, you can never be guaranteed 100% of what someone else is going to do. You can trust to a point, but things change, right? You know, so there's a leap of faith in relationships, you know, and if you, and you know, we, I know in the group, there was sort of talk about trust and so forth. And so, you know, what you were saying about starting out, you know, how do we know, you know, it's about knowing what we want, knowing ourselves, and then you break it down into small steps. What would be the first thing that someone could do, you could do to start exploring what a relationship with someone like, you know, male would be, or a female, wherever the relationship is you want to have, whatever sex, you know, you're into. Does that make sense as a starting point?
So, yeah, and I'm going to take us off on a tangent because I want to go down this road, but I just want to ask this. So this is all really cerebral, like having your fundamental needs met. Mm-hmm. And when you describe it the way you describe it, it makes perfect sense. Mm. Like if you, your security or feeling of importance or intimacy, whatever it might be. But I wonder whether, and I hate the fact that I'm going to use this as a reference, but like Love Island or The Bachelor and Bachelorette, there is also chemistry and just the physical thing of if you get men and women together in a small space, they will pair up. And that doesn't seem to me to be about fundamental human needs. That's almost like a nature program. It just happens.
But if you think in their interaction, the guys are quite status, well, the girls are sort of status driven as well, but the guys, you know, generally speaking, status is a bigger thing for men than it is for women. They are meeting their emotional needs for connection. They're meeting their emotional need for status with that dynamic within each other. Yes, there's a chemistry, but they are meeting those needs at the same time. Does that make sense? They're not maybe going off on what the meaning and purpose of the relationship is in the context of life.
But reality TV aside, just if you get men and women together, like whether it's a working environment, attractions happen.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And if you think, if I'm paying you loads of attention, right, because I'm really attracted to you, I'm meeting your need for attention. And if it's back and forth, that need is being met, right? I'm meeting your need to feel important and significant. Yeah. And, you know, maybe if we're having a really in-depth conversation, you know, you feel a sense of safety with that, a sense of security with that.
So it might not look like it's happening, but it is.
Yes, but it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my thing, because I just thought, well, maybe I just, you know, because when one is single, the amount of people who say, oh, you just need to go out more, join a club. And there is something to that. But obviously, because you're just going to be around people, but because your needs will be met in some way.
Totally. I mean, everything is about, all the things that we do are to meet a need. You know, we're doing it through different vehicles. You know, the need for intimacy and connection wasn't necessarily always met through a person. You could get the need for connection through going for a walk in nature, through prayer, through meditation, through, you know, reading a great book, you know, and feeling calm. You know, that need for safety and security. You go home, maybe. Maybe you're, you know, you cozy up in bed. You know, there's all sorts of different ways of meeting it.
So how do you figure out what those needs are within yourself, and then how do you then communicate that in a relationship?
So I mean, you'd look at first, what are the ones that are driving you most? So I mean, something like safety and security is a primal need for everybody. So you'd think, well, where am I meeting that need the most, and what's most important to me within that? Although you'll meet all of them, you'll meet them at different levels. So like I was saying, if you're very driven by security and safety, you're less likely to take risks in the relationship. When you're with someone, obviously you're not going to go out on a date and sort of say, well, tell me about your emotional needs, but you can observe somebody. Right? You can observe.
Maybe it would just be quicker though, Lee.
You can observe.
Fill out this questionnaire.
How someone behaves. Watch how their body language is, what they talk about. You know, if a guy's talking to you and he's talking about constantly about all his achievements and accomplishments and how well he's doing, this kind of thing, maybe there's somewhere around that he's looking for his sense of status to be acknowledged, to feel like he's, you know, he's sort of, you know, everyone has a ritual, right? It's like a mating ritual. If you look at peacocks, he's fluffing his feathers a bit, you know, in the best possible way to show that, you know, he's capable, that he's masculine in the sort of traditional sense, if you like.
And he thinks that by showing off those qualities, that makes him more attractive to you.
Yes. Yeah. So you'll see that. And it's just, it's being able to sort of be aware of what these needs are. Because in a relationship context, you know, when you understand what each other's needs are and how you understand what your definition of love is, how you receive love, what your love language is, so to speak, then you have an understanding of how you can meet that person's needs. Do they feel safe with you? Do they feel loved by you? How would they know if they felt loved by you? Do they feel like they have enough attention from you? You know, you getting enough attention from them? Do you feel like you're growing together? Do you feel like you're contributing to each other's worlds? Do you see what I mean? So when you have an understanding of what they are, you know, if you know, it's very rare in a relationship that if you're meeting each other's needs, that someone says, oh, damn it, I'm off. That's, I've had enough. Do you know what I mean? It's usually, you know, through lack of connection, through lack of attention. You know, you have a couple who start off with this great relationship and they're excited about each other, meeting each other's needs. Then they have a couple of kids and all of a sudden there's no time for each other. You know, and all of a sudden their relationship slips down the ranks of what's important. The kids come first, the domestics, you know, and domesticity is the killer of passion. You know, so that's how, you know, understanding what those needs are is helpful within the context of a relationship.
And then I come back to, you can tell I'm going to be a bugger, sorry, Lee. Back to interference. When I think about what a perfect, in inverted air quotes, sorry, listeners, that's a physical gesture. When I think about what a perfect relationship looks like, I think about television and movies and literature. So not real life. And I think there is a lot of interference. Even if you go to a card shop and you look the way... greetings cards are they articulate love of that and so
the unicorn of love
so you think oh well that's what love should look like, that's what love should feel like. But I think as I get older and I talk to more and more friends, and I have one friend who has a relationship that I think is brilliant because it's completely unconventional. They don't live together. They know exactly what they need, and so when they come together it's great. So It's that thing of seeing people in my own life and with my own eyes, as opposed to the interference of media and greetings cards, of saying, actually, it can look however the hell you want it to look.
Totally. And it's like, it's so different nowadays to, you know, years ago when people would get married to procreate, they would get married for economical reasons. They would sort of have this model of staying in the same bedroom for years and staying married until death us do part and all this kind of thing. And they would soldier on, and that's great. But now we're doing it in a different time. You know, in a relationship, you can define it how you want to define it. you know, you don't necessarily have to share the same bed every night. You don't, you know, you don't necessarily have to live together. It can be what you choose it to be. The important thing is, you know, we're talking about attraction, is you can have, you must have things in common with the person. You know, you have, that's what's going to attract you to each other, the things that you have in common, right? It's the similarities, right? You've got to share the same values and the same goals. Because if you don't have the same goals, you might have someone, oh, Christ, he's really hot in bed, or she's really hot in bed, or whatever. Oh, my God, it's fantastic. You know, we're meant to be together. But you don't share the same goals, you're not going to go anywhere. So it's not necessarily the people that we have this magnetic attraction to, like on Love Island, necessarily are going to make the best life partners because they don't share the same goals. Yeah. You know, they might be great and teach you something and you might learn something from it, but it's being very aware of what you're looking for. And as you quite rightly say, you know, being observing what interference there is out there and what we're being taught in the world, you know, about through love songs, through media and all this kind of thing, and through the romanticizing of what relationship is, because really you're looking at two essentially, you know, flawed human beings coming together and trying to make something work. So there's a human perspective to it, and a compassion and empathy on who these two people are, you know, and trying to see things from another person's point of view rather than projecting this idealistic view of what we want. Because people will often say, well, you know, I want this kind of relationship. I want this kind of person. He's going to be this or this and this and this. But who are you, who do you need to be to attract the kind of person that you want? Do you know what I mean? It's like it comes back to ourselves and what are we bringing to the table and how are we honing ourselves and our own communication and our communication skills, our, you know, levels of respect for ourselves, our boundaries, our own life before we go into relationship.
It's such a fascinating, and I think, goodness me, there's so much to it, but it all comes back to you. And I think that's only something I've learnt recently. Because that's part of the interference. It should be this magical moment, and it's not. It's, well, knowing yourself.
It's totally that. And I mean, you know, I've met people, because I had a horrendous history of relationships, which is why my fascination with them started. I mean, I went from one disastrous relationship to the next, looking for the unicorn of love. And then I realized, actually, there's one common denominator here. And do you know what that common denominator was? Me. Yeah. I thought, it's the same bloke, different name.
Yeah.
Right? Same dynamic, just looks slightly different. I've given him a different name. But so we set up, you know. So really, for me, I had to sort of unlearn those beliefs I had around relationships, my blueprint of relationships. And that took quite a while, but was worth every minute. And learn to not gravitate towards that sort of magnetic attraction straight away. But there are people who do meet, and they have this attraction and they make it work. You know, I think there are certain points that are really important, you know, that will keep a relationship healthy and functioning, which we can go into in a bit when you're ready. But I don't want to skip too far ahead. So it is, you know, it's a hefty subject, but I think it's such an important one, because although some people say, oh, I don't want a relationship, I'm fine, you're on my own. Essentially, a healthy and vital and nourishing relationship will amplify our experience of life, you know.
But as a single woman sitting here, it does make me feel a bit sad to hear you say that, because now I feel like I'm half living my life because I'm not sharing it with someone.
No, I mean, listen, at this moment you are not, and this where you are right now is great. And some people can live a single life and have many other relationships that are nourishing. They're perfectly happy with that. But, you know, it depends on what you want again. But, you know, what I mean by that is that in a relationship also, I say it will amplify your experience of life. Often I'll find people in relationships is not amplifying their experience of life. They're stuck in a cycle of a relationship that is destructive or is draining them. Yet they're repeating the same cycle over and over. And whilst relationships will have their challenges and they take, you know, conscious thought and effort and presence to keep them alive and to keep them growing and to keep them nourished. You know, it's kind of like a, you know, a plant. If you ignore it and don't put it out in the light and nourish it and put nutrients in, it's going to fade. Right. You know, but that's not to say as a single person, you can't have a great life, because you can.
No, but then I am thinking about, I was chatting to my friend John the other day, and we started out in journalism together, and we have both in our time have had incredible opportunities that have involved travel. Mm. And I, during my time on a magazine, went and did hotel reviews in the Maldives 3 times. And he's done like the most incredible things as well. And we were talking about how we used to do this thing. You'd travel all that way. You'd get really nice treatment. You'd get to the hotel room, they'd bring your bags and you'd shut the door. And then you'd go out to, like, for example, with the Maldives, like an overwater villa, you'd open these big doors and you'd see blue sea for as far as the eye can see, like crystal clear. And the first instinct is to go, look, but there's no one there to see it with you. So there is a part of me that is now going, that is sort of biting back about the whole not living life, if not life being amplified in a relationship, because I want to believe that I can be very happy single, but also I completely acknowledge that I've had those moments where I have desperately wanted to share a moment with someone, whether it be a romantic relationship or just wish that my mum was there and go, oh, look at that, a stingray.
yeah, definitely, definitely.
So it's an interesting one. But let's talk about, because this came up in the Facebook group a little bit, let's talk about the instance of shutting down, of going, I've tried relationships, they suck, I've been hurt, it's taken me a while to build myself back up, so do you know what, screw it, delete the apps, I'm fine, because I definitely have done that in my past, and I know friends have done it as well. And the first thing people say is, you've got to be back in the game. You know, you've got, you know, what's the expression about riding a bike or get back on the horse or whatever it is. So what about, because it does seem to be more common of people just going, I just can't be asked to do the dating thing, to get dolled up and all that.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one, isn't it? And I think there is definitely a value in resetting and re-centering yourself after a relationship, maybe that's not worked out, or maybe you feel betrayal on some level, or you feel you're going on tons of dates and it's not working out for you. Resetting and making sure you're getting your needs met yourself, and you're finding, you know, when you go into the dating scene, it's having this expectation of what you think it's going to be, right? Whereas actually, and it's interesting that one of the comments in the group was about getting all dolled up to go out. And I would sort of look at that and say, where's that drive coming to get all dolled up? What does that mean? And is the expectation such that this date is going to be something? And if it's not, it leads to disappointment, because when there's that kind of expectation, rather than going into it from more of a place of appreciation of what this meeting might bring from a much more human perspective. So rather than this person is going to be exactly like they portrayed online, this glossy edited version of themselves, right? They don't want to tell you they floss in bed at night or anything like that, right? Or how they cut their toenails. They're going to just tell you the good stuff, right? But going in and as an exploration of this is one person meeting another person from a very human perspective, and that's all it is. There is nothing more. And it's not necessarily about going out on this great big hot date. It's about meeting in a more neutral way. And it takes the heat and the weight out of it, I think.
It's, you know, interference again. Yeah. I remember in my 20s when I was living in central London and was on the dating scene, as it were, which I wasn't ever particularly good at. It was always all of my female friends were like, you got to do this and play games, and if you like him, don't text him for 3 days, and all of this nonsense. And I was like, well, this seems like, this is not how I approach any other aspect of my life. So why would I use this approach in dating? Now I can look back on it and view it in that way. I obviously didn't at the time. I obviously fluffed up every single date.
Did you now?
Yes, me.
Is that your perception?
Because I would go there like literally on high adrenaline, because the
expectation of what it would be.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think I am somebody who has quite high expectations generally. So with a view to the comment about getting dolled up, I interpret that, and I sort of relate it to that thing of going in at a 10, because I'm like, if I go in at a 10, then in return, I'll get a 10.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, it's great to have, you know, to have high, what's the word I'm looking for? To have high standards, right? But it's slightly different to expectations, right? You can have high standards, but to go in with an expectation that someone else is going to be at the same standard as you, or the same level of sort of higher standard as you, then you leave yourself potentially open to disappointment.
Mm.
So I think the thing is to reset, to regroup, to become very clear on what it is that you want, and to go in from a perspective, it's more of a, you're exploring something.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, often with, you know, people go a lot online to date, and there's, you know, I hear this a lot where people just text the whole time, and these texts can go on for months, you know, and they don't actually meet the person. But I think there has to be some sort of guidance and sort of some boundaries around how often that goes on for, because it's easy to that slip into that being fulfilling an emotional need, but to go where?
There should be, like, you know, on Netflix, you probably don't get this, Lee, but I do because I do a lot of binge watching, is after like 4 hours of Netflix, you get an alert saying, are you still there?
Yeah.
With, like, with the dating apps, it should be, are you sure you don't want to meet yet?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's something in getting on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, because if someone won't pick up the phone and you can't have a conversation with them, then that's the next level. You know, when I was online dating, I would have this thing. If I didn't speak to someone within a period of, you know, a couple of weeks, then I'd say, well, I'd say, look, you know, should we get on the phone? Would you fancy a chat? And if it's no, then move on, kind of thing. And I would meet them quite quickly for a coffee, like for an hour. That's it. That's all it was. And it was a coffee. There was absolutely nothing else.
Well, bringing it back to our mutual friend, Tim Ferriss, we had a massive bonding moment over about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He did speed dating. I think he got his virtual assistant from the 4-hour work week to set up a day's worth of half hour coffee appointments.
God,
and he just had a day of meeting women for half an hour at a time in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And I think from that one day, he was with someone for 5 years.
Really?
I think so. I could be getting that wrong. Tim, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, though. I like that story.
No, but I'm sure.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Oh, I'm sure that's what I read, but I could have just romanticized it. But it's much more, it would be more efficient. And maybe I should do that as an experiment on this podcast.
Like, that would be fascinating.
A day of half hour coffees.
Yeah. I think it's half an hour. I think you can you tell that much in half an hour? You know, I think it's...
that's interesting.
You know, an hour.
Yeah.
It just gives you an insight. And I think the thing is it's very easy to sort of broadcast, as she sort of broadcasting this entire podcast. the irony.
you've just broken the fourth wall, Lee.
I know. And make statements, she says. But it's, you know, asking someone open-ended questions is how we get to know them. You know, because when we go in and if we're feeling self-conscious and you're on a date and you're constantly sort of thinking about what can I say that's going to make me look a certain way so this person sees me the way I want them to see me, rather than asking open-ended questions about, you know, how do you feel about your work? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? So they have to answer. You get to learn more about the other person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of, have you ever heard of the Gottman Institute?
You met, do you know what? It's a note in my phone because when you came round the other night and you were saying, I've got my Lee note.
Oh, did you?
And you said Gottman, and then was it Cal Newport as well? Did you say to me?
No, I don't think it said Cal Newport. Anyway. It's something about Gottman Institute, yeah. So, I mean, when they're talking about, you know, factors that influence a positive and healthy relationship, they're talking about love maps. And love maps are essentially about understanding your partner's world. You know, and it's kind of, you know, and in a therapeutic sense, if I'm trying to explore something with someone, I'm asking them open-ended questions the whole time to find out who they are, what they like, you know, what do they connect to, How do they feel about certain things?
Yeah.
What makes them feel important? What makes them feel excited? What do they enjoy doing? You know, all this kind of thing. And love maps are, especially in a relationship, once you start getting to know someone, they're a great way of really, you update them the whole time. So you're constantly checking in with that person about who they are. You know, what are they, you know, because the person you meet when you're, you know, in your early 20s and the person you're still with in your 40s is a different person, right? You know, so I think, you know, that's, you know, an important thing. And I think also when going on a date, scan the environment with that person to find things that are positive about them. Because this can help focus your attention within that period of time you're spending with them on the things that you can like and enjoy, right? If we go in and we think, oh my God, I can't speak to him for an hour or her or whatever, and immediately you're focusing all the things you don't like.
Right.
Say you're pattern matching to a pair of shoes that your, you know, your chemistry teacher wore, and you hated your chemistry teacher, and this bloke's wearing the same shoes. Do you know what I mean? You're thinking, have you been with bloody shoes? Oh my God, you know, yeah. And you're focused on that. If you focus on, even if it's, you know, they have nice eyebrows or they have nice hair or they've got a nice tone of voice, when you're focusing on the positive, that's going to start to generate more of a positive emotion in yourself. So there's almost an art to it, right? And then that's going to set you off on a better sort of emotional state. Because if you come into a dating situation anxious or think, what are they going to think of me? You know, how am I going to come across? I'm nervous. You know, am I good enough? Am I attractive enough? Am I desirable enough? All of these, am I, you know, all these sort of this dialogue, this inner dialogue and misuse of your imagination as to what this could be on this date. All the things you might not want to have happen, all this person, the things that they might think about you. But shifting your emotional state to focus on that person and the things that you can enjoy about them. And how can I leave this person better off for having met me for an hour? What can I, how can I show up as a positive force in the world, as a positive human being in the world, and whatever that means to you, as someone who can connect with other people? So it's really, you know, you're going out exploring that side of yourself and that ability to connect with other people. And when we focus outwards, we're removing that rumination and those sort of that possibility of catastrophizing internally and all that dialogue of, am I enough? You know, will I be loved? Can this ever happen for me? All this stuff that we can easily fall into, you know, because it takes a certain amount of courage to date, a certain amount of courage to be in relationship, to grow, to be seen, to turn up without the emotional armor on. You know, and that's not, I'm not, when I say about without the emotional armor on, I don't mean you go in and sort of say, hey, this is me, you know, these are all, this is my life story. Because trust is built slowly over time, right? Small steps, small baby steps. You build a relationship over time. So that focusing on the positive of a person, even if you look at them and you just know instinctively, oh, this is not the person for me.
Right.
From a human perspective, can lead to far more enhancing engagement and leave, you know, thinking actually that was all right. You know, I had a coffee. It was an hour of my time. If that person's not for me, you're not sort of in this sense of overriding disappointment when you come away. Like, I've got all dolled up, I've gone home, and I'm alone again. You know what I mean? Yeah, God damn it. So it's just sort of shifting the perspective a little bit and what we're focusing on.
So it's that fine balance of not worrying what they think of you.
Yeah.
But also making them feel good about having spent time with you.
Listen, it's about human, it's a human engagement.
That's dental floss. That is like, that's a sliver of...
You know, it's natural, right? If you're going on a date, you're going to think, what, you know, if you're excited about it, it's natural. We're going to think, you know, wonder what person's going to think of me. Because you're going to want that need for attention, Matt.
Yeah.
You're going to want that need for variety, you know, for connection, for intimacy. For, you know, I want to feel important, like, I, you know, I mean something. So that's natural, right? But it's managing that emotional state. Because when you go in with all those expectations of what this might be and you come away disappointed, how can you go into it so that it becomes a form of sort of an interesting even engagement, even if it's not particularly emotionally nourishing? It was interesting. You know, I went out on dates with people and I would get there and think, this is not for me. But what can I find out about this person the next hour that might be interesting? And I met people, you know, who were... I don't know, they might have been in some sort of work that I would never have heard of before. So I think, well, I'm going to ask some questions about that. and find, and I'd learn something new. And I think, well, actually, I learned three new things there. And then I'd very, you know, kindly and gently afterwards call them. And if they'd said, oh, can we go on another day? I'd say, listen, really appreciate your time. It's not going to work out for me, but thank you for spending some time with me. That's and if there's really any nice. Questions, I don't need to justify it any more than that.
Yeah.
That's my boundary right there.
Yeah. You boundaries know? Are so important.
Yeah. You know, so understanding that boundary, and I don't need to explain myself away.
Mm.
That's how they respond to it is their stuff. It's not mine.
Yeah.
And I've said it gently. I've had a gentle start up to it. And that's it. Then coming from that perspective allows you to go on sort of different dates, not having the same crushing disappointment when you come home. You know? And it only takes one, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you never know what's around the corner. And what's happened in the past isn't necessarily indicative always of what's going to happen in the future if you bring some awareness into the situation.
Yeah, if you change what you bring to it each time.
Totally.
It's like, I'm trying to think of an analogy now. But yeah, it's just if you go to the gym and you're wearing, for me, if I'm going to the gym and I'm wearing three sports bras, bitch is doing some high impact work. But if I go to the gym and I'm not wearing three sports bras, I'm going to be doing something where I'm not jumping up and down.
Yeah. So love it, Emma.
That's the first thing that came to mind. I'm sorry. So what I mean is if you go into the situation with your three sports bras on.
Yeah.
No, it's just
you're not going to want to take your knicker. You're not going to want to take your top off.
Your experience is going to be different based on what you've taken into the room. And for some reason, I thought about the gym.
Yes, no, that's fine. Yeah, and I think the thing is when you have an awareness of what your patterns are, because what's so interesting is you'll get people who will be get very triggered in relationship, right? Mm. Because if you think of it like this, our brain, if you think of it, is a sort of pattern matching organ. We match the patterns the whole time. When we learn something, we're laying down a pattern.
Yeah. So right? Meaning that if something happens to you when you're growing up, you will almost inadvertently.
Yes. You're matched to that pattern. Yeah. So say you've been in a relationship and you've, it's broken up, the person was unfaithful or whatever, right? And then you meet someone new and they do something that reminds you of the other person. It might be so instinctive that suddenly you match to that old experience and you get an emotion, right? And then you get your thought and then you suddenly are looking through the lens of that old experience at what this person has done, right? And so you're repeating that old pattern over and over again, right?
So you react to that person's tiny thing.
Yes, from the experience of the past, right? Mm. Through that same lens. So unless we have this awareness of what our patterns are, what we want, how this is different from our old relationship, we're going to repeat those same old patterns. And this is where it's so interesting is because we have an emotion, a split second before a thought, and it's almost happened so rapidly and you might feel it in your body. And so when you feel something, it's that time to be able to connect to what is actually happening. Where's this coming from? Mm. Where's this pattern driving from? You know, and if you're having, you know, you find yourself in an argument with someone, for example, who you're in a relationship with, it's being accountable for our partner, right?
Mm.
You know, for our own history that we might be, you know, projecting onto the person in the present day.
Mm.
You know, so it's very helpful. So we're going back to what we were saying in the beginning of knowing yourself. You know, what's going to be different this time, knowing what you're looking for.
Mm.
And when you're going into these, to dating, in, you know, from what you were saying, from your perspective, from sort of, you know, a level where you want to explore it from the beginning point, just having that awareness around those different aspects.
It does seem like shifting, or not shifting your boundaries, but if you felt that your boundaries were crossed, breached in a previous dynamic, that enforcing them or changing them or adapting them is really important before you move into the next thing.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, from my own experience, I remember, you know, I had my boundaries. Well, actually, I didn't really say what my boundaries were. That was my problem.
Did you know what they were, though?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No, I had no, because my desire to get my need met for intimacy and connection and status and safety and all that kind of thing, those emotional needs, was so strong that I was choosing the wrong people who were not equipped to to be in relationship, and neither was I.
Was it coupled with those needs? In order to have those needs met, you were a people pleaser.
Yes, yeah.
And therefore,
I would override all of, my boundaries. I'd loosen my boundaries. You know, if you think of boundaries as the signposts that let someone know when they've crossed the mark with you, they're a signpost to people. And so when I got into a relationship again, I had to really practice. Actually, if someone was, a bit of gaslighting was going on, or they were dropping calls and this kind of thing, I would call them on it in a very, boundaried way and a gentle way. And I remember with a partner I'm with now, we had some conversations in the beginning, which was very gentle, but me saying, listen, I need to make this clear that for me to have a friendship with anybody, to be in a relationship with anybody, I need to have some sort of consistency. And if that doesn't work for you, that's absolutely fine. I get it. But for me to have any kind of intimate engagement with you, that's a primary need for me. I need some consistency. And to be able to say that and to be able to say, what my needs were was important.
So you're in that position, because there was a brilliant comment in the group about how do I know if I'm overreacting? How do I know if I'm being a dick, if the other person's being a dick, if I need to worry about this? So that situation is a great example. You set a boundary because you realise that in previous dynamics you had softened it. And how do you know that you're okay to say it? And if somebody reacts to it and says, no, Lee, actually, that's nonsense. Should that be a big red flag and a warning sign with a big old siren going?
Look, I think the thing is you have to state what your needs are, right? And I think the way you state them is key. So it's like going in, there's something called the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which is these basically, again, the Gottman Institute. There's these four things that if you do these are going to be destructive towards your relationship.
Right.
So it's criticism. If I'm making a criticism, a complaint, and I'm saying, when you drop my calls, you're being a complete, right? So I'm assassinating that person's character.
Right.
Right. Rather than saying, actually, if you don't call me back, when you drop my calls, I feel like I'm not heard or I'm not seen. And what I need you to do is just to let me know what's happening, right? I've not annihilated that person's character. I've said what I need, okay?
Yeah.
Now, that person may turn around and say, I'm not willing to do that. But the way I go into it, the gentle startup, is a key point. If I go into, or the other ones are sort of defensiveness. Now, if the other person turns around, as you say, and says, no, you're wrong, they get on the defensive side, that's another four horsemen of the apocalypse. If you get very defensive and you're not accountable for your part in it, right? And you turn around and you say, no, that's nothing to do with me. And you push it back onto the other person. Now, yes, that could potentially be a red flag with the person, or they could be triggered. What's underneath their action? What's underneath the behavior? Because sometimes the person might be scared, they might feel embarrassed. So that's another key point to look out for. And then you've got, contempt. When someone is you're in a dialogue, in a disagreement with someone, and there's contempt, That's hugely caustic in a relationship. And also stonewalling, which can happen with more commonly with men, because men actually feel stress and adrenaline twice as much as women do, which is really interesting. Their heart rate will increase and so forth a lot more. So often they'll stonewall in order to literally, I need to back away from this.
And stonewall is just shutting down. It's a silent treatment usually.
Yeah. And the problem is, when someone stonewalls, the person who feels they're being stonewalled then brings out, the mega gun and goes a bit harder. Right. So
the best way to deal with stonewalling, in my experience, is just let them get on with it.
Well, the thing
is, it's like a temper tantrum. A very quiet, introverted one.
Well, also, if a man, there's sort of male and female differences, brain differences, and the way we communicate and so forth, which are interesting to know as well in terms of understanding how we relate to each other. But because of the amount of adrenaline men will experience when under stress and the way they function, sometimes they literally will stonewall in order to just let their emotion die down before they can come back into it. And when people's heart rate increases to more than 100 beats per minute, we're in the emotional brain.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so you can't think clearly. When you're in your emotional brain, you're having a debate with someone about something. This is what happens within couple dynamics. We end up being, the person ends up being triggered by something, an old match from the past, right? Both people are triggered. They start getting into criticizing, defensiveness, contempt and stonewalling, right? And then all of a sudden, their anxiety, you know, the increase goes up in their, in terms of anxiety and stress, and they're in the emotional brain. Of course, once you're in your emotional brain, you're not going to think clearly because that's not how we're designed.
Right.
If you're in your emotional brain, you're in fight or flight, and you're either going to fight or you're going to flee.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to think rationally, to use cognitive function, you need to calm down. So if you're in a debate with someone and you're putting your boundaries down, someone is reacting, sometimes you just need to stop and check out and say, listen, let's talk about this when we're both a bit calmer. Mm-hmm. And when you come back 15, 20 minutes later and you feel calmer, then it's a whole different conversation again. You know, so it's, you know, it's when you understand these dynamics, it makes communication a lot easier. Because often we think, you know, certainly I've got loads of girlfriends and closer clients in the room that will think that men will be like hairy women and communicate the same way as us.
Yes, but that's not true, is it, Lee?
No, it's just, you know, it's not. And they'll, you know, often, you know, women will have their emotional tag to memories is a lot stronger than men. So remember events, birthdays, the emotional content of stuff more than men. And men will say, I don't know what she's talking about. And in an argument, we'll be able to drag up all this stuff. And men will be like, I don't get it. How could she remember all of that, you know? So
that's,
yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
So that answers the thing in a very long-winded way. Does that answer the thing about the boundaries and about the red flag?
Yes, it does. Because ultimately, well, not that it's as black and white as this, but if you say, when you do this, I feel X.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel rubbish.
Yeah.
If that person then continues to do it, disregards it, gets defensive, or then uses it as a weapon against you in the long term, get out of Dodge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's when you are bringing to the table some of the principles we've spoken about, you know, you will naturally tend to not attract the people that you might have attracted in the past. Right? When you start resolving those patterns and you start bringing to the table these sort of principles, you will attract a different type of person. Because those people who are avoidant or critical or contemptuous and behave in those ways will not have the same appeal. Does that make sense?
Can you reset boundaries in a relationship? Or is that
hard? No, I think definitely you can reset them. Because obviously, you know, if we're with someone long enough, you know, our boundaries might shift and morph and, you know, we'll grow. That's the idea. I always think in a relationship, there's you, there's the other person, and there's the relationship, right? So you're both doing your thing and there's enough breathing room for the relationship to grow and each person to grow. And then together, the relationship keeps growing because each person is growing individually, right? What was the question again?
Can you reset boundaries within a relationship?
So, and I think that's where you're, you know, when you're talking about love maps and knowing each other, you know, when you're updating those and you're asking open-ended questions to somebody, you're getting an insight into what you know, life means to that person. You can, that's, you know, a perfect example of when you can start talking about boundaries and talking about, you know, what works and what doesn't work for you and for them. You know, how can I help you? You know, because it's always easy to sort of think of it from our perspective, but having the empathy and compassion to see it from the other person's perspective while honouring our own boundaries, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Very clear. It's just a lot.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a big subject, isn't it?
Particularly for my red baby love brain.
Hardly, but look, you've got a big brain.
Yes, but it's you were the first person who ever said to me about training my muscles. And I remember when I was round here about 3 years ago, and I said, this situation with this friend has really upset me. And I really want to tell her, but I can't. And you said, well, why not? And I said, because she might bollock me. And you went, well, I think you need to flex that muscle and give it a go and see what it feels like to actually say that what has happened is unacceptable. And that was the beginning of so much.
And it's the same in relationships. It's like when, you know, when you're getting into a relationship, it's flexing those muscles of feeling vulnerable. You might say something and someone might not respond in the way you want or you would like.
But what you said was, what's the worst that can happen? What if she does come back and bollock you? What does that tell you? And it told me exactly what I needed to know, which I already I'd already kind of knew deep down was this is an unhealthy relationship, friendship, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And it's that knowing that you being able to express that, you know, to yourself and being able to have those boundaries in it. So you can either choose to stay or to leave.
And and actually it was a thing I had been putting off and putting off and putting off and putting off, which in itself had created its own tension. And there was something, so when I got the reply and it was exactly as I expected, it was slightly aggressive, dismissive. I remember feeling a sense of relief of, all I needed was the sign, but all I needed was the data and I've got it. And now I can hit return and move on. God, my analogies are really off today. I'm so really.
Not at all. Yeah, because it is. It's like it's that flexing that emotional muscle, which is so, you know, so valid and important in, you know, our relationship, in relationship building.
And that was just in terms of friendship. But I would say that definitely the first time ever doing that has meant that, and I've said this before in this podcast, but doing that and understanding it was okay to say how I felt has meant that the friendships I have now are so different, but they are so much better. And the people who have come into my life, who were already maybe like beauty industry is quite small, but the people who maybe I'd known for years who are now dear, dear friends, because I'm fundamentally different. So I'm attracting
different
friendships.
Yeah, totally. And then that, and that's exactly it. And what you, when you reset yourself and you're clear on what you're doing and what you're looking for and what you're, you know, you're, you want in your world, then you start, you do start attracting different people. And it's really interesting. The sort of people that, the sort of men I would have been attracted to in the past, if they approach me now, I'm just like, not
do one.
You know, I mean, I'm in a wonderful relationship now. You know, it's really interesting to see how we can grow and shift and you know, and morph into sort of something else, you know.
It is. And it shouldn't, I guess, I always like to think that there's nutritional value in these conversations for the listener. And I think the thing is that it is okay to set your boundaries.
Totally.
You may, but with the caveat of you may experience a period of turbulence if setting that boundary doesn't necessarily go the way that you want it to.
Yeah, and that's where the expectation of it is. Yeah. And in being able to feel compassion and empathy for someone else. Because remember, what we're going into, for we're, you know, people are going in with their different emotional triggers, you know, to understand what is always beneath that person's behaviour. But whilst, you know, be mindful of not getting into a cycle where you become a caretaker or people pleaser with the other person, because you're constantly so understanding, you're like chronically forgiving of someone, because that chronic forgiveness is never going to serve you in the long run. And it also prevents the other person from learning the lessons they need to learn to grow. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I have forgiven people in my life who maybe I've experienced betrayal with, but that doesn't necessarily mean I want them in my life anymore.
Right.
So there's a difference, and that's for each person to decide what's right for them.
What's the name of the guy that you introduced me to again? One of our mega bonding moments over your kitchen counter.
Tales from the kitchen.
With cups of Buddha tea. Is it Vishen? Is that his name?
Vishen Lakhani.
Yes. He
just got separated, actually.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That, I think you... put me onto a video that he'd done about forgiveness and about the the brain waves. And I think it was compared to Buddhist monks who had been meditating for years and the difference that it makes in your brain, actually your brain function. And therefore
pathetic nervous system. Yeah.
Of actually forgiving. And if you focus on somebody who you feel that has harmed you or hurt you, to actually focus on making peace with that internally and just saying, I don't like what happened. I accept responsibility for my part in that because we all contribute to these dynamics. And actually saying, I forgive you in your head about that person actually changes. It might even be a neuroplasticity thing. I have to go back and put the video. Listeners, it will be in the show notes. Because it is very, very interesting about how vital a role is in just... forgiveness and moving forward.
And interesting, you were saying when you're sort of, you know, you imagine that person, because that, what I was saying earlier also about sort of when we misuse our imagination, also when we put our imagination to good use. So when, you know, you're going on a date, you're, you want to say something, say you're going to have a courageous conversation with someone about boundaries, or you're feeling a bit vulnerable or whatever, imagining how that relation, how that conversation could go, and feeling courageous and feeling grounded in that conversation helps set you up to succeed within it. Does that make sense? Because the calmer we can be, the more centered we can remain, then the more capacity we have to think clearly. You know, it's just the way we're wired.
I'm now going to tell you that as a 41-year-old woman, when I date, within the first 15 minutes, a guy will say, "So why are you still single?" Or something like that. And that immediately gets me feeling defensive because I don't really have a great answer. Because what is a good answer to that? And then also the other thing that I know you'll love is that I always try to emphasize how busy, I am, but how I'm not really looking for anything. You know, I'm just, you know, putting my toe in the water. It's that thing. But actually, I know you're looking at me thinking the healthy thing to do would be to commit and say, actually, I'm really interested to see what happens.
There we go.
but I think a lot of people I know, women who are maybe 30 plus who are dating, because not because I'm eliminating an age group, but just because they're the ones that I tend to know more, is there is that thing of going in feeling like, well, I do feel good. I do feel self-contained. I do feel like I've got all my shit covered, as it were. And so I don't want somebody to think I need.
It's a really interesting one, that, actually, isn't it? Because, you know, as women, we don't need in terms, especially sort of, you know, back in the day, it would be an economical reason people, you know, men and women might get together, as I said. But you can want that in your life, you know, that sensuality, that engagement, that interaction. But you see, also, there is something around, you know, when you look at masculine and feminine energies within people, right, we all have masculine and feminine energy within us. You know, but you'll have a driver, a driving energy. And you might meet women who are more masculine than feminine, right? And you might meet men who are more feminine than masculine. But if you're with a man who is very masculine, then, and you're not needing him for anything, then some of, you know, and say his love language is acts of service, and he likes to feel needed and like he's helping, like he's, you know, solving problems, and you don't allow that because you don't need anything, there's some sort of flexibility in there sometimes where you can sort of, and I had to learn this, you know, to allow the person to do what feels good to them and to sort of shift into more of a feminine energy sometimes. You know what I mean? You know, my partner's very alpha. He's very masculine, but he's very good at shifting into his feminine when I talk to him, because he knows, you know, I'll sort of, the way to hear me and listen to me is to be present, right, rather than try and solve things all the time. Although men will be tempted to do that, won't they? Have you ever seen that YouTube video, "It's Not About the Nail"?
No, but I can imagine it already.
Listeners, research it.
I'll put the link in the show notes.
It will make you laugh. What was I saying?
It's like that line in The Breakup, you know, the Jennifer Aniston film, where she's ragging on the dude whose name I've forgotten now, Vince Vaughn, to do the washing up or something. And she basically
domestic
yells,
bliss.
"I don't want you to do the washing up. I want you to want to do the washing up."
Yeah, exactly. Forget that. Yeah. So it's playing around with those, that sort of masculine and feminine, knowing when we're in our masculine. Does that make sense to you? I mean, masculine sort of energy is sort of quite solution focused and very driven, you know, when we're in our workspace and we're being ordered and all that kind of thing. So that's a sort of more of a masculine energy. Feminine energy is more sort of more playful, more sort of communication, it's more creative. And sometimes when we don't need anything and we're very independent, sometimes it's just allowing someone to come in and do some stuff for us, you know, that can benefit actually both parties. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. You know? I remember a friend saying to me once, when I was seeing someone, she was like, "Well, I think there was something that I needed to do with my car. Like I needed, I think I thought I thought one of the tyres had a puncture or something, a slow puncture. Mm. And she said, well, let him do it. And I said, why not? I thought I'd let him do it. I can do it. And then if it happens again, I know what to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You see that? Yeah, yeah. And I see, I totally get it. If it happens again, I know what to do. But equally, you know, if he gets something out of doing it and you get your tyre fixed, everyone's a winner. And it's kind of that, you know, allowing that masculinity to come through for some men, that's important.
Yeah.
That play of masculine and feminine. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And being able to let go of the sort of reins a bit sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and bring in that sort of more feminine, playful energy into the relationship, you know, because it's the masculine and feminine energies that are playing that creates, you know, passion and you know, creates that sort of chemistry between men and women, so, you know, or what, you know, even if it's two women, it could be masculine and feminine energies, or the same sex, you know.
If someone is listening to this and they're thinking,
what the hell is she talking about?
No. If they're thinking, you know, like they might have a niggle about their partner or...
which is so common.
Which is common. How, how do you know if it's just like a teething problem as opposed to a bigger issue?
Well, it depends. I mean, there are many issues in relationships that don't get resolved. Mm. I mean, you might have someone that's incredibly untidy, for example, and they just will never be tidy. Mm. You know, and sometimes the engagement around the problem becomes bigger than the problem was originally. Mm. So say someone's really untidy and is like, my God, I come home every night after work and he's left his stuff all over the house. He hasn't done the washing up. You know, I feel disrespected.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm not heard. And if he cared about me, he'd be doing the washing up, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? That's the sort of typical thing I would hear quite a lot. In his world, he didn't see any of that. He just came off and took his shoes off and dropped his shirt on the ground because that's what he does. It doesn't mean that same thing to him, right? But there are some, and so the engagement around trying to solve the problem becomes bigger than the problem was in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Right? So some things, you know, when you're searching for your partner, it's about knowing what you can also accommodate to a certain degree. Mm. Someone's, you know, essential nature is who they are, right? So you can have, you know, you look at what things you have in common. You look at what, you know, what does the person want in their life? You know, if one person wants children, another person doesn't, that's a sticking point, right? Mm. If one person believes in monogamy and the other one doesn't, but you have a great time, it's a sticking point. You know, but there are some things you might kind of think, well, is it worth me accommodating that to a degree because of all the other good stuff I get? And is our engagement around it civil enough in order to get past it?
Yeah.
And you might have in-laws that are difficult and you might not agree on how to be around the in-laws, but the in-laws aren't going anywhere. And that issue remains the same. It remains an issue that's sensitive. But how can you communicate and get around that?
Mm.
Where else can you put the focus that will enhance the relationship? So that diminishes somewhat.
Mm.
And I think what's interesting was a question in the group about making time for a husband. And he's down the bottom of the list. Do you remember that one?
Mm.
So you've got kids, family, parents, all that kind of thing. And it's interesting because I think culturally, you know, we look at kids and they take the primary focus when we have them. But really, the relationship, if you don't have that relationship strong and nourished, then you don't have much in the emotional bank account to draw upon when you need to. You know, so it's like you may have to let some other things go or ask for help in order to balance things out so that you and your partner can get some time together and have some rituals in place that are emotionally nourishing.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be anything big, but being able to spare each other to create the space for time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's coming back to what I said at the beginning about it all looks easy, but actually you kind of always have to, have that tab open and go in and refresh it every now and
you
again.
I mean, that's a great.
You can borrow it.
Yeah, I'll be using that one, yeah. I'll make notes, scratch on my notepad. Yeah, I mean, it is, and it's almost sometimes I feel this sort of rush to the altar, you know, get married and we'll, you know, feel safe and we'll do all these things. That's what the sort of cultural message
rituals.
Is. Rituals.
Yeah.
You know, the cultural message is, you know, you meet someone, you get married, you have kids.
Mm.
Right. But that, as we said earlier, does not have to be like that.
Mm.
There are many ways to have a relationship in a life that is enriching. We have to remain conscious of what that relationship is and what it means and who that person is in order for us to keep our own interest and stimulation up with regarding it. Because you talk about, you know, people talk about sex wearing off, for example, over time. But we have to cultivate the environment for intimacy and passion. You know, if you put the bins out and you've been up all night with the kids and all this kind of thing, you're not creating that culture of sort of, you know, eroticism and sex and passion, right? And our imagination can be great with regards to that. Remembering all those times when it was good, what did work, and conjuring up those feelings for that person and for that situation, and developing rituals that enhance each person's experience of the relationship. It's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot. And do you know what? We are going to have to draw this episode to a close, but I feel like we've only come back on the show. Because there's so much, because I know that in the group there are questions about gender roles within relationships. There are questions about how to get past infidelity.
That's a big one, yeah.
Yeah, and I do feel like that probably warrants and deserves its own show with you, because I know that you've got some incredible insight, and it would be a shame to just sort of smush it onto the end of this episode, which would be...
I hope that's been of use to the listeners.
Well, I'm going to go and have a lie down.
Well, they're just all going to be... If you're still with us, listeners, and you're not snoring...
Please don't... I've said this... I always love it when people come on and they're like, is anyone still listening? I'm like, please don't say that on the show.
Of course they are. It's the Emma Gunn show.
Nice save, Lee. Nice save. So obviously... that is a very big, definitely a starting point for more of these sorts of conversations on the podcast. So if you want more of the same, go into that Facebook group. The link is in the show notes. Ask a question. Lee's also in the group. So if you want to tag Lee, like at Lee, she'll see it too. And then maybe we can get you back on to do some more specific shows and drill down into some, like the infidelity issue and more.
But
thank you. I found it incredibly interesting. There's a lot of information. You are a blimmin' gem. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. Seriously, I was so excited when you invited me back on. And it's just, I love the way your show has just skyrocketed from when I first came on. No, seriously. And for any of you that don't know Emma, she's the most wonderful, warm human being. She is. And so sort of wonderfully beautiful, you know, literally inside and out. And I think what you're doing here with this podcast and the ripple effect it will have is truly brilliant, because it will be impacting people in ways that you probably don't even know yet. And I think that is, you know, really admirable.
Well, so, thank you. And thank you for supporting it. And also, I have attracted people who listen to this show who are just flipping awesome. So one of my favourite things is to hear from you. So do get in touch. And thank you, Lee. That was really nice of you to say.
My absolute pleasure.
Right. Until next time. Thank you so much for listening. Before you go, I just want to remind you that it could not be easier to get in touch. Email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. That's for listeners only. And actually, if somebody who is not a listener jumps into that mailbox, I get them off my land quick and proper. You just be reassured about that. You can also DM me on social media, where I'm at Emma Gunns on Instagram and Twitter. And obviously, if you want to have a conversation with me and other listeners of the podcast, please do join that Facebook group. The link to join is in the show notes. It's always, always a pleasure, and I always really thank you for spending your time with me. I cannot wait to see you on the next one.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.